Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Open the door, get on the floor, everybody rock that dinosaur.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? You are listening and watching the Command Zone podcast, sung and hosted by Josh Lee Kwai. How's it?
Hi, and Jimmy Wong.
How's it?
We're also here in the studio with our good friend, Mr. Infect himself, Craig Blanchett.
Captain Infect, please.
That's right. Craig Blanchett, at Craig Blanchett.
Captain Infect. I didn't study at Naval Academy for all those years to be called Mr. Infect. I'm Captain Infect. Thank
Captain
you very much.
Captain Craig.
Grew up on Phyrexia.
Wow.
He probably did.
Yep.
I'm getting infected just being next to you, Craig. So we have a really exciting episode today. We have our Rivals of Ixalan preview card.
And for the first time ever, it is a playable commander.
A very good commander.
And in multiple colors. It took some time.
Finally, we've grown to the point where we've got the recognition to get a multicolored legendary creature. Thank you, Wizards. We have Zakama, Primal Calamity. I'm not going to read the card quite yet, but that's the name of it. What happened is there's a game nights coming up, ooh, and we are playing all the multicolored legendaries from Rivals of Ixalan in that episode of Game Nights. And as luck would have it, Craig is on that episode of Game Nights.
Hey.
And he was assigned Zakama as the deck he was going to build. So not only do we have Zakama as a preview card, we're going to do a full deck tech on the deck that Craig used in Game Nights. But before we get to all that, we need to talk about our wonderful sponsors. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. That's the affiliate link that you go to and use to support this show, to support Game Nights. You know, we're talking about Rivals of Ixalan. We're talking about an awesome card from Rivals. If you want to pre-order that card, you can go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, and that'll be not only getting the card you want, but supporting this show.
And if you want to support the show even more, Ultra Pro is one of the sponsors of the show. And, of course, Ultra Pro, every single time a new set comes out, makes playmats, deck boxes, sleeves. Craig, you're a big Ultra Pro guy, right?
Ultra Pro is awesome.
Craig is actually the person that introduced us to Ultra Pro way back in the day, so we have a lot to thank you for, Craig, because they've been a great sponsor of the show. Obviously, they make really high-quality products, and we use them every single episode of Game Nights and having a new I love collecting playmats. So you can always support the show by buying Ultra Pro products wherever you may go in your LGS, or, of course, by going to Card Kingdom.
Didn't Ultra Pro make the Game Nights playmat as well?
Yes, they manufactured all
sick,
of our playmats the Aftermath playmat. So, yeah, big ups to them. I mean, we wanted the top quality, so...
Speaking of Patreon, the final way to support the show is directly. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can become a patron of the show. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to...
This is a good one.
Jacob Funderburk.
Bring the thunder.
Right. Jacob, you rock. I almost forgot to say that. Sorry, Jacob.
Right. You rock. Thanks, Jacob.
Okay, let's go right into our Rivals of Ixalan preview card. It is Zakama, Primal Calamity. It's a three-headed dinosaur. Zakama costs 6 red, green, and white, so 9 mana total. Yep, for a legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur, it's a 9/9. Has vigilance, reach, and trample. It says when Zakama enters the battlefield, if you cast it, untap all lands you control. Then Zakama has 3 activated abilities. You can pay 2 and a red, and Zakama deals 3 damage to target creature. You don't have to tap Zakama or anything for any of these abilities. You just, if you have 2 and a red, and then 2 and a red again, you can deal 6 damage to something. Again, that's target creature, 3 damage. You can pay 2 and a green, destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Hmm.
Or you can pay 2 and a white, and you gain 3 life. So again, 3 activated abilities. It's lightning bolt something, destroy an artifact or enchantment, or gain 3 life. This card seems insane. I actually misread it the first time. I didn't even really notice the you untap all lands you control, and I still thought it was awesome. But the fact that you can, when you cast Zakama, and it's important to note, it says if you cast it. So if you flicker Zakama or some other way to bring it in and out of the battlefield that's not actually casting the card, then it will not untap all of your lands. But as long as you cast it, you can untap all of your lands, and there's nothing that says you can't have, you know, a lot of lands in play,
which makes his ability that much stronger because you can you're guaranteed the ability to use them the turn he comes into play, which is crazy.
I mean, just
this guy is insane.
It's a 9/9, right? So
with vigilance, reach, and trample.
In a normal scenario, you have 9 mana, so that means you can activate any of its abilities 3 times, you know, at a minimum. And of course, you could have some artifact ramp and creature ramp, in which case those won't untap with Zakama. But, you know, it's not hard to envision scenarios where you play Zakama and just blow up 3 artifacts.
Yeah. Or, I mean, 3 artifacts. How about just kill some creatures?
Kill some creatures, a couple of enchantments.
I mean, this is amazing in EDH, obviously, because the 3 damage turn creature is not amazing, but it's still pretty good. It can kill a lot of important things. Like, I'm looking at an Oracle of Maldaia sitting on the table right now. But it also, the destroy target artifact or enchantment, I mean, you play cards just to do that once.
I feel like that's the strongest ability on him. And the fact that it's repeatable for 3 mana, it's like,
yeah,
it's insane. It's
not hard to think about just you play it and destroy all the artifacts and enchantments on the battlefield.
Basically. All the relevant ones, yeah. You probably leave some signets behind, but
jeez, it seems incredibly strong.
One thing about the card to notice is that a lot of the Eldrazi, like Ulamog and the big ones, say when you cast this spell, then you do something. However, Zakama says when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it. So it's not an on-cast trigger. It does require you to cast it, but Zakama still has to make it onto the battlefield.
That's true.
So,
if Zakama gets countered, you don't get to untap your lands. Right. It has to hit the battlefield. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so Craig, this was your deck, and we're going to avoid spoilers because that episode of Game Nights obviously is not out yet. It's coming out in a couple of weeks, but we did play that game because it takes us a few weeks to edit the show. You were tasked with building this deck. What was sort of your first thought of what the strategy of the deck was going to be, or how you were going to, you know, sort of what angle you were going to take when building it?
So when I saw him, you could kind of see inherently that you want to drop a lot of lands, play a lot of land ramp as much as possible, as quick as possible, so you could get out this 9/9 beast as quickly as possible, untap all those lands, and then use other abilities to either double that mana or use that mana in interesting ways, untap that mana to be able to use it again.
But it's basically like play Zakama, have a bunch of lands in play, and then activate his ability a million times, basically?
Activate his ability as much as possible, because you're guaranteed to be able to do that, and you can repeat that process as much as possible.
Or cast the rest of your hand out, because now you have 9 free mana, potentially even more, depending on what your lands do.
His potential is insane. This commander is one of the most powerful I've ever played with. It's incredible.
A lot of decks we would say don't put Temple of the False God in there. Not this one.
This guy seems crazy. Just so much value. And at the very minimum, it can be a 9/9 reach, trample, vigilance that effectively costs you 0 mana. Even if it didn't have all the abilities, it's like play it, untap all your lands. It's as if you didn't spend any mana yet this turn. Just that alone is crazy. Much less it also gives you a mana sink to use all that mana if you didn't have another way.
Anytime you can cast 2 spells in a turn, commander, it's good. Anytime you can cast 3, it's even better. This you could cast like up to 4 or 5, or do 3 spells and blow up 2 things. Like, there's so much you could do just because you can untap them, and then you have a monstrous threat on the board. And here's the thing. When the threat comes down and is able to deal with other threats immediately, that's what makes a really good commander. Because it's like, okay, I play my commander, pass the turn, hope it survives by the time I come back. You're just not in a great spot. But with this, you have instant speed triggers on everything, and it's just a 9/9. So it's really hard to deal with if you don't have direct removal.
That's true. You can see a scenario where you play it, untap all your lands, pass the turn because it's all instant speed stuff, and you're like, hey, anybody that destroys that like goes to get rid of it, I'm just going to blow up all your stuff.
Yeah.
Like, then everyone's going to be, they're going to be really hesitant to pull the trigger on like swords or something because if I've got a soul ring and I've got a propaganda, it's like, well, that stuff's just going to be gone for free in retaliation. That's really powerful.
It's also kind of on the best player at the table or the person that's going to get the affected most by it to often pull the trigger first, too. If it's like I have propaganda, orrery, and like 3 other incredible things on my board, and Craig's obviously just looking at me, I'd be like, well, if I don't do it, he's going to do it no matter what at the next end step. So you have to like keep that in mind.
I mean, you have to time it. I think you can time it so Zakama comes down, the untap your lands trigger goes on the stack, and you Swords to Plowshares Zakama in response. So that once the lands are untapped,
Zakama's
not there anymore to blow up your stuff. I mean, obviously, but you have to have the spell in your hand. And
yeah, this is very situational, what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing we learn about Zakama, I think, is you see it coming when you're playing at the table.
Definitely,
as an opponent. So you're like counting the mana. How much mana you got? You're going to be able to cast it next turn? You have to know those things when playing against the card, because it's really important, because you're like, oh, Zakama's going to come out next turn. Maybe I don't want to play my enchantment or artifact. Maybe you want to play a creature with at least three or more toughness. Okay, let's talk about the deck here. You mentioned getting a bunch of lands into play. We've got some cards laid out here, which are sort of the usual suspects for that kind of thing. And you're in green, so you're in the perfect color. We should say, like, obviously, and it's obvious to us, but we don't, sometimes we skip over things like this because it is obvious to us. In a deck like this, because your commander untaps lands specifically, your ramp is going to be mostly stuff that puts lands into play or deals with lands. You know, a Birds of Paradise still may be good in this deck, but that type of effect, like a Land War Off and stuff, you probably don't want as many of that kind of thing because Zakama doesn't untap those things. Mm-hmm. Again, Mana Rocks. You still want Sol Ring, of course, because it's awesome, but maybe you don't put Signets and things in because, again, Zakama doesn't untap your artifacts. So in place of that, you would play things like, what do we got here?
Yeah, I took out all Signets, run things like Rampant Growth, Nature's Lore, Cultivate, Explosive Vegetation, Sky Shroud Claim.
Yeah, all of those are cards that go find lands in your deck, usually basics, but Sky Shroud and some few of the others don't, and put them directly into play.
And those are just the instants and sorceries. There's also creatures like Sakura Tribe Elder, Oracle of Moldiah, Karametra, which is interesting if you're playing a creature-based deck.
Yeah, let's read Karametra because I think this is a card that we haven't... I guess Sakura Tribe Elder we haven't read a lot on the show either. Oracle we talk about all the time. It lets you put extra lands into play and sort of draws you cards.
One of the best creatures of all time.
Yeah. Karametra, though, this was the deck that Melissa DeToro played on game nights. But she wasn't using Karametra in the exact same way. This would be using it mostly for ramp. So Karametra, God of Harvest, is 3GW for a 6/7 legendary enchantment creature god. Has indestructible. Has the same sort of rider clause that all of the gods have. If your devotion to green and white is less than 7, Karametra isn't a creature, which generally you don't actually want these to be creatures. You want them for their other effect. And it says, whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a forest or plains card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your library. So it turns any creature you cast into a rampant growth. It's just like only for green and white, obviously.
But you can grab duels.
But it
with
is
that.
A
yeah, it says
card,
forest
yeah.
or plains, so you could get Shocklands or duels or the Havlands, and then
or the new cycle lands.
And then if you play, basically all your creatures become rampant growths. That seems pretty good.
Yeah, especially if you're playing cards like Sakura Tribe Elder.
So Sakura Tribe Elder, 1 and a green for a 1/1 Snake Shaman. Sacrifice Sakura Tribe Elder. Search your library for a basic land card. Put that card directly into play tapped. Then shuffle your library. So
it's
just
it's exactly rampant growth, right?
Yeah,
but on a creature.
Just as on a creature.
For 1 green and 1 other.
That's
on
a
1/1.
That card is actually one of the most played cards in green. Even it's basically often slightly better than rampant growth because you get a block out of it.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of put it, you play it, and you wait. And if anybody was going to attack you, you block, and then before damage, sacrifice it. And so you sort of get rampant growth plus a little life gain in that case.
Yeah, and depending on your hand, you also don't necessarily need to sack it the turn you play it. You know, you could wait, being like, well, I don't have any 5 drops to play, but I do have a 4-drop. So, right. Like, no matter what, I'll make it to the 4 because I have a land in hand, etc. So, like, there is a lot more, I think, play to Sakura Tribe Elder. I think it's at the top of the list on EDH Rec for almost every single green deck.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah,
it's very, very good.
It's, like, one of the top 3 most played green cards. So we can see that the early game strategy of the deck is like get as many lands in play as possible because when you cast Zakama, you just want a ton of lands. So something you mentioned earlier and is really smart in the deck is you also included a bunch of cards that it sort of have the phrase whenever you tap a land for mana, it produces double that mana or twice as many mana or it produces an extra mana. So the classic one is Mirari's Wake.
Love this card.
Yeah, this is 3 green and a white. It's an enchantment. It says creatures you control get +1/+1, which is good, but not the reason it's in the deck. The second thing it does is it says whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. So you tap a land for mana, you get 2 mana instead of 1. Or if you had Temple of the False God, you get 3 mana, I suppose.
Yep.
So think of that with Zakama. If you have, you know, 6-7 lands in play, let's say you have 7 lands in play. You tap it for 14 mana, use 9 of it to cast Zakama, untap all 7 of your lands. You've still got 5 floating and 14 mana now that because you can tap those lands again. That's 19 mana. 19? Yeah, 19 mana you would have. So you could activate Zakama's ability 6 times in that scenario.
Yeah. You've essentially
spent... That's just 2 cards.
And still have 1 mana left over.
Yeah, that's...
It's a lot.
That's insane. There's a couple of other cards that do this.
This is a Josh Lee Kwai favorite, Zendikar Resurgent, 5 green, green for an enchantment. Basically has the same line of text whenever you type in land of mana, land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any land of any type that land produced. And then also, whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card. So this just really helps refill your hand, especially in a creature-based deck like this, and when you're casting monsters like that.
Zendikar Resurgent is like, it's just gone into more and more decks for me. If there's a lot of creatures, it's just going in there. And again, yeah. You can do the same thing. Yeah. And so it can help you cast a creature like, this is the most Craig card ever. Vornklex, Voice of Hunger. So it's 6 green-green for a legendary creature, Praetor. It's a 7/6, has trample. Has 2 abilities. Whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. So it does what Mirari's Awakened Zendikar Resurgent does. But then it sort of does the opposite to your opponents.
This is the brutal part.
Whenever an opponent taps a land for mana, that land doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. So in a way, it sort of makes their lands tap for half as much while Vornklex is out because they can only use it every other turn. One thing to note about Vornklex is even if you get rid of Vornklex, any lands you tapped during that while Vornklex was out still don't untap, even though Vornklex is gone. It's not like, oh, Vornklex got killed, so my lands do untap as normal. Nope. No, they don't. If you tap them when Vornklex was on the board, they're not untapping during the next untap step. This is a brutal card.
Those Praetors, man, they're all good. Pretty brutal.
They're
all mostly good. The red one is whatever. But I think the green one and the blue one, I mean, like, look.
Well, Elishnorn's pretty good.
The blue
too.
One's ridiculous. Well,
yeah, everyone but the red one. Never
mind. Yeah, Shieldred's good too.
Yeah.
If you don't know, there's Elishnorn, there's Shieldred, there's Vornklex, Jyn-Gitaxias, and the red one is Urabrask. You can go ahead and look those cards up, and you can tell the red one not as
they're good. All good. Yeah, even the red's good.
I mean, in a deck, like, in general, I've been taking these out of my decks because you don't want to spend 8-9 mana for a card that everyone looks at and goes, nope. But in a deck like this, when you could potentially cast it for free, or if you have, like, one of your crazy 28 mana turns because of Mirari's Wake, then you can cast this and a bunch of other things, and if you end up losing one of the things that you cast, it's even better than almost a lot of times. It's like you're putting out a meat shield for Zakama because you want Zakama to live, but you put out something else that's so threatening that if they can't deal with that, then you definitely win. If they can deal with that, then they haven't dealt with the other big threat, which is Zakama.
Right. And I've play tested this deck a lot, and there are a lot of scenarios where 24 mana is just kind of the norm.
Just the norm?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Jeez, crazy. So we've got a deck. It has a ton of lands in play. It's trying to get those lands to tap for double because Zakama obviously wants lands and things. But you're already in that scenario. What other cards are sort of good in that scenario or sort of help that game plan? And we have a few listed right here. Sort of Feast and Famine, we talk about all the time. When it connects with an opponent, you untap all your lands.
So especially with the mana doublers, being able to untap those lands, not only with Sakama's ability, but with abilities like Sword of Feast and Famine, or Nature's Will, or Bear Umbra, they just make it so much stronger. Because every time he either attacks or hits somebody, now you're untapping them again.
Right. So let's talk about those other two cards that you just mentioned. Bear Umbra
is this card.
2 green-green for an enchant creature. When enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has whenever this creature attacks, untap all lands you control. This is when it attacks, right? So it doesn't have to hit them like Sword of Feast and Famine does.
Which is important because on that attack trigger, you can then pair it up with things like you can have the Bear Umbra on and the Sword of Feast and Famine.
You can use the mana when it untaps to shoot down the creatures that might block it. Then you connect with the Sword of Feast and Famine, untap again. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good card.
Not to mention it has Totem Armor, too, on Bear Umbra. All the Umbras do, which is basically a shield. So the enchanted creature would be destroyed. You remove all damage from it, and then the aura falls off. So it's like a one-time protection shield, too. So it would stop, you know, a lot of ways of being killed, like a board wipe.
Yep. And then this is an interesting one. It's one of these cards that I feel like it's always wants to be.
It's kind of like
Vorinclex
almost.
Almost,
kind of like Vorinclex enchantment with certain stipulations.
Yeah. I always feel like it's like the 70th card. I want to put it in, but then it just doesn't quite make it. This is the deck for it. It's Nature's Will. It's 2 green-green for an enchantment. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, tap all lands that player controls and untap all lands you control. So it's mostly the untap that you're after. Usually if they have lands that were untapped and they wanted to use them, they would use them.
If they're playing blue, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and if they're not, then... I mean, if they're holding them for something, they're going to use them before the untap thing happens, generally. There's some scenarios where that could mess him up, though.
It's true.
But mostly, yeah, you just want to untap your lands and then activate Zakama again or, you know, play Vorn Collects or something. That was really clever to use that stuff. And then I'm going to let you read this one because this is a very... Actually, we should let Jimmy read this one because this is a very Jimmy card.
It's the only red card we've read so far. So
I mean, if you're going to have all this untapping shenanigans on attack, then this card is sort of like a natural include.
Hold on, I can't read the title. Just kidding.
Because he's got the invocation version.
It's Aggravated Assault, which goes infinite in so many different decks because of what it does. It's
it definitely goes infinite with Bear Umbra, Sword of Feast and Famine, and Nature's Will.
For two and a red, it's an enchantment. You can play it. And then what's crazy about this is how cheap it costs. Three mana to play.
Three mana. And then five to activate.
So to activate, it's three red-red. Untap all creatures you control. After this main phase, there is an additional combat phase followed by an additional main phase. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery.
It gives you additional main phases too, which is crazy because then you can play out other things if you so wanted.
Yeah. I mean, extra attack steps are usually a little dangerous in Commander just because it's very it requires every other player to be able to be attacked usually, or you know, like otherwise you're playing Aggravated Assault and everyone's got propaganda. It's like, oh cool, that was not.
But I mean, on the other hand, if there's one player that's open, you attack that player, activate it, attack that player. Like you,
it could be a single player removal spell for sure.
Yeah,
I still think this card is great.
Well, and on those untaps,
so much mana in this deck.
Yeah, and on those untaps, because of Sword and Feast of Famine, you may be you certainly are going to be netting mana in a deck like this.
To where you could potentially be paying for that propaganda that the other player is playing.
So I might only be able to hit, say, Mel for now. But because I'm attacking with Sword of Feast and Famine, untapping all my lands, it's five to activate Aggravated Assault, but I have nine lands in play. Now with those extra three, I'm willing away at Jimmy's board so that once Mel's gone, I can now attack Jimmy, activate Aggravated Assault. The combo here obviously is if you haven't something's tapping all your lands, then you're activating Aggravated Assault infinite times, technically. Not
however many times you can get in, unless you have Bear Umbra, in which case it happens on the attack.
Yeah.
Well, and if you have Bear Umbra on Zakama, now he's vigilant 11-11 with Trample, so he only takes two hits to hit them.
And normally these abilities don't want to stack, right? Like a Bear Umbra and a Sword of Feast and Famine. It's hard to use that mana, right? Because you're going to attack, untap all your lands. You have to cast instant speed stuff or something. Before Sword of Feast and Famine, you deal combat damage and then untap again. They normally don't double up very well. But because of Zakama's ability, you can use all that mana every time.
Aggravated Assault is at sorcery speed. Yeah, so you definitely want... I mean, Zakama is the main reason that Bear Umber is amazing and Sword of Feast and Famine is great. There have been so many times where it's like, I deal damage, like, oh, I get to untap. Can I use the mana? Or like, I have all this extra mana now. It's like, no, I have no instant speed effects. But Zakama, they're all built onto the creature. I mean, Zakama is like an enchantment creature and instant rolled into one. He's like everything in the same thing. It's ridiculous.
So another card that works really well is Zakama. And honestly, Craig, when I looked at it in the deck, I was like, why is this in here until you explained it? So I'll let you explain it, but I'll read it first. It's Archangel of Thune. It's three white for a 3/4 flying angel with lifelink. It says, whenever you gain life, put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. And I'm like, okay, well, Zakama doesn't have lifelink. I don't understand what this card's doing, but I forgot about one of Zakama's abilities, which is easy to forget about.
So, yeah, his least used ability, guaranteed, is his life gain ability. For one white and two other, you can gain three life. But in combination with Archangel of Thune, now with that life gain, you can start putting +1/+1 counters on all of your creatures.
At instant speed.
At instant speed, which if you're running a land, you know, drop deck like a Myria Angel or stuff like that, now you're getting a bunch of flying tokens with +1/+1 counters. And there's a lot of ways to build this deck.
Yeah. I didn't even think about the possibility of sort of leaning towards the more life gain stuff. It's obviously the ability when you look at Zakama that you're like, it's sort of the least cool. It's the one that you're like, it does this.
It's like, yeah, sure, life gain. When is this going to be relevant?
Once in a while, I might dig myself out of a hole. And it's nice to have, but it's just not the type of ability you think like, oh, I'm gonna build my deck to maximize that.
But something that, again, 24 mana is not out of the question in this. on a regular basis, by like turn seven, like that is not out of the question almost every game. So 24 mana into 3/3, that's 24 life.
Zakama has trample.
Yeah.
So you could get in a scenario with enough mana where you're actually with Bear Umbra maybe and Zakama and Archangel where maybe you just commander damage him out right away.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Activated 8 times. Bear Umbra activated another 8 times. What is that? 16 counters makes it a 27-27 or 25-25.
I mean, you just hit them once.
Know, yeah, if they just have only a small creature, just jeez. Boom.
Well, here's the thing.
And he's untapped.
Or they don't think about that. You know, they're like, oh, I block with my Secure Tribe Elder or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know what's crazy, too? Trample. You don't even have to tap him. You leave him untapped. Yeah. And he's got reach. So it's like, come at me, bro. Like, what are you going to hit me with Merit Lage? I don't care. I'm blocked.
Well, the other thing about Trample and the way it works is that it assigns damage after lethal damage to the creature is assigned. And because his Tune of Red ability only targets creatures, you can technically assign lethal to the creature and then the rest of his commander damage will trample through, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, like if it's a 4-4, you could shoot it for,
and then you do trample through for 8. Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
Man, that is interesting.
So, I mean, like,
so
I
you
think,
could, you, it'd be very easy, I think, for an opponent to not understand. Not calculate all the possibilities
right.
and think, okay, well, I'm going to do this and I'll live through this turn. Right. And you go, well, I activate gain 2 life. I shoot your guy. All of a sudden, I trample through for 21 commander damage.
Yeah.
And they're just like,
people in my play group, stop watching this episode now.
I would never do that to you. Trample damage, I think, is one of the more misunderstood mechanics. I've won random games off it, being like, no, 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 it assigns lethal, and then it tramples over.
Well, it's like with Death Touch. If you can give Death Touch to a trample creature, then you only have to assign one damage to the creature that's blocking, in which case it'll trample through for the remainder.
Yeah.
Because if you have Death Touch, one damage is lethal damage. Let's talk about another cool card. This one is sort of... So if Archangel of Thrun was playing off of Zakama's Gain Life ability, this card is sort of playing off the fact that the entire deck is built to put a lot of lands into play. It's a Myria Shepherd. This is a card we sort of pegged as... And I'm not sure if we were correct or incorrect. I've seen it in play a little bit, but not a ton.
I don't know if people... But the thing is, like, you need planes specifically to make it the best.
Yeah,
so
that might be it.
So two-color decks are best suited to do it, and a lot of people are playing four-color
decks. It's still good with
days.
Not planes. I think that's...
It really is. It gets back anything into your hand.
Let me read the card so they know what we're talking about here. It's Emiria Shepherd. It's 5 white-white for a 4/4 flying angel. Has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may return target non-land permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. So even if it's not a planes, you still get it back to your hand. But... if the land is a plains, you may return the non-land permanent card to the battlefield instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, if it's a non-plains card, land that comes into play, triggers landfall on Emiria Shepherd, you sort of Eternal Witness something. It's not exactly the same because you can't get instants and sorceries. It has to be a non-land permanent. But if it's a plains, and that could be a dual land or a shock land that says plains on it, then you just put that card into play.
Yeah.
This will trigger off of things like Rampant Growth, Cultivate, Explosive Vegetation could possibly
Karametra.
Get you two things.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden you're ramping and putting two things into play. Karametra, oh man, really good with Karametra. Can get you Karametra back.
Yep.
You know, if it's some, well, no, Karametra is indestructible, so it would probably have to be exiled or
something. Yeah. Okay. Karametra is tough to get rid of in any deck.
Discarded, there you go.
Discarded, yeah.
But this card seems really good just because it's something we talk about a little bit in deck building, but it's like these one-off cards that just happen to synergize with what your deck's already doing.
Right. Any of the landfall triggers in this deck are good, but this one kind of takes the cake, in my opinion, as the best. I mean, it costs 7 mana, so there's an inherent cost to that.
But your deck's already just Ramp City.
Right. Another good one is like Emiria Shepherd or Rampaging Baloths, or one that's definitely going in this that I missed at first, which is Lotus Cobra.
Right.
Just anything with landfall in these colors is incredible.
You know, you could almost count Emiria Shepherd as like pseudo card draw in a deck like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Because it's going to get you cards, right? It's not going to draw them off your deck, but in most games, by the time you cast Emiria Shepherd, some stuff's going to have died, somebody will board wiped, you know.
Yeah. And again, I would be so wary about having... Looking at this table, we have like 5/5 drops and like 7 or 8 plus drops just sitting on this table of cards in front of us.
Yeah.
And normally I would be terrified. I'd be like, what are you doing? Craig, this is how to not build a deck.
But the other half of the table is all
just
ramp.
To get
yeah.
ramp out. Yeah. And like when your commander costs 9 mana, it's like, well, how am I ever going to get there? Like when I was building my Gashoth deck, I was like, what am I going to do? I guess you just have to ramp a bunch to get here. And I forgot the part where if you do ramp a bunch, you can also put other giant monsters in your deck. So, good job, Craig. This deck is ridiculous.
The problem with ramp decks classically is that they tend to really falter under two scenarios. One is you draw all your ramp, but none of the stuff that you're trying to ramp into. And mm-hmm. so you just end up with a ton of mana, but nothing to do with it. The other is you draw the other half of your deck, all your huge stuff, and none of your ramp. The good thing about Zakama is you can actually sort of weight it in favor of extra ramp, because Zakama will never put you in the position where you don't have anything to do with your mana. Mm-hmm. You can always activate Zakama's ability. So this is the type of deck that, you know, we normally say 10 card draw and 10 ramp spells. You could have 20, 30 ramp spells in this one because...
Easily.
Yeah, you're not going to end up in a scenario where like, oh no, I have 30 mana. Oh, if you have 30 mana, I'm blowing up every enchantment and creature on the board.
Yeah.
You know? That's not bad. It's not oh no.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Plus, once Zakama dies... you need the mana to get him back out again.
Yeah.
And he will die. Trust me. He's not a popular...
He's very threatening. Once people play against him a few times, he's not going to be
welcome. A few times? I only need to play against him once to know. Well, here's a very super secret tech card that I don't think has seen much play in Commander, but with a deck like this and the monsters that you have, oh boy. We all remember Audric. Audric is a guy that is He's a soldier. He gives abilities to other
creatures.
He's a general. Yeah. Well, he does say he's a soldier on his thing.
That's a good point.
So
He's a legendary, though.
He's a legendary Lunarch Marshal. He's 3 and a white for a 3-3, Audric. And he says, at the beginning of each combat, creatures you control gain. First strike until end of turn if a creature you control has first strike. And the same is true for flying, death touch, double strike, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, skulk, trample, and vigilance. So, of course, Vigilance, Reach, and Trample, all three abilities on Zakama. Being able to give that to every single one of your creatures. And then you're playing cards like Archangel of Thune, so everyone gets flying as well. Woo! We're off to the races.
There's a lot of other word soup cards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really good card to play the turn you play Zakama or the turn after you play Zakama and just give all your creatures Vigilance, Reach, and Trample at the very least.
Yeah, Zakama alone is worth playing this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can make it even more worthwhile with some other cards.
I really like the thought process behind putting Audric in your deck, which is looking at your commander fully, right? Looking at every piece of text on the card and going like, okay, you know, Archangel of Thune, that works with the life gain. I think a lot of people, myself included, probably would skip the Vigilance, Reach, and Trample part.
Yeah.
But you said, oh, well, it's got three freaking keyword abilities. What takes advantage of that? Oh, something like Audric.
That are all incredible in Commander. Like, Vigilance is one of those ones that in one-on-one isn't that good, so it's overlooked. But in Commander, Vigilance
like we always
is
say,
huge.
You're on defense three turns, and on offense only one turn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and Vigilance is inherently a blocking ability.
And to give all of your creatures Vigilance.
And Reach.
Is just crazy. And then to Trample.
Yep.
So because of Audric, there's a new card from Rivals of Ixalan that...
This is that word soup I was talking about.
Seems like it has a possibility. And I think you mentioned this before the show, Craig, which is there's probably a lot of people that are going to want to build Dinosaur Tribal from this, although Gishoth seems better if you're in Dinosaur Tribal.
Yeah, 100%.
But you can still do it. And this works really well with Audric. So we thought we'd mention it. It's a Zatalpa, Primal Dawn. This is a new card again from Rivals of Ixalan. It's 6 white-white for a legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. Yes, could be your commander. It's a 4/8, and it has flying, double strike, vigilance, trample, and indestructible.
Ooh,
it's like all of the best ones in Commander.
It's
like literally all of
the
best. Hexproof is the only one.
Indestructible is huge.
Yeah. It's...
You strap some greaves on this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so brutal.
Here's the thing, too. If someone's like, oh, man, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to attack with all my creatures and then board wipe because, you know, that's it. Audric's like, huh, don't care. Thanks for your second main phase, everybody. All my creatures have indestructible now.
This
is a culpa.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, it really does mess. Audric really does mess up a lot of opponent's plans here.
Audric only gives... You have to have it at the beginning of combat, right?
Each combat, though.
Oh,
so on your
right.
opponent's turns. Because usually it's like, I have a board wipe, I'm going to swing out because my creatures are dying anyway. So they can't even do that if that's... Because that's, I'd say, one of the most effective ways to get rid of Zakama. It's just board wipe because Krigs put out, you know, Vorinclex and 5 other crazy things this turn. May as well get them all at once.
While we're talking about new cards from Rivals of Ixalan, there are, we should say, and we're going to do a set review, so we'll talk about these more in depth, but there is a cycle of monocolored Elder Dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the white one, was Atalpa, and this is the red one.
Of course it's the red one for me. 4 red-red for a 6/6 Atali, Primal Storm. The art on this is unbelievable. It's a legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. When was the last time we had Elder creatures? Was it Dragons?
Well, we had Elder Dragons from Dragon Tarkir. I think that's the last time.
And before that, it was Legends.
Yeah,
I was going to say, do we have Elder or anything else?
I think this is
Elder Dragons.
The second time since Elder Dragons.
I like to think of them as all just kind of having fun back in the day. Like, what's this? Was
Vivictus?
Yeah, like Vivictus Osmati. I think he was the
Naya
one. So like, him and Zakama were just chill buddies, you know?
Now they're elders. They're elders, exactly. Of, you know, EDH still works elder
They're
dinosaur.
More refined these days.
Yeah, Elder Dinosaur Highlander. Still oh my works. Gosh.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
2018 marks a new year for Commander. All right, whenever Atali Primal Storm attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. Then you may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost.
Again, what? It's a 6/6 flyer?
No, it's just a 6/6
for 6. Okay. Yeah, it's but it's huge. It's just when it attacks?
Yeah. When it hits.
No, when it attacks.
Yeah.
Is it when it attacks?
When it attacks. Yeah.
That's insane.
It's right there on the card, Craig.
So the picture, doesn't it remind you of the third Jurassic Park? Or is it the second one? Where they're like in the water and they
really remember
thing with the
many
beak
Jurassic
is
Parks
like...
after the first one.
Okay.
I do remember.
It reminds me of Jurassic Park in general. I don't know which one.
It's true. I guess they all kind
What's
of.
What's the one where they genetically created one? That was the new
the
one.
The most recent one.
It looks
yeah.
kind of like that one, I think.
Yeah, kind of.
So when it attacks, you exile the top card of each player's library, not just one. You don't have to pick one. And it, you just get to cast.
This guy's itself, crazy. By the way.
Cast any number of those?
Yeah.
So you could cast. 3 or 4 cards off this if you got lucky and nobody
you're almost
lands.
Guaranteed yeah. to cast 3 or 4 cards.
Well, they can get lands.
3 or 4.
So I guess you're...
Oh, right. Okay.
If it's a four-player game...
Probably like 2 players.
If it's a four-player game, you're probably like 1.8 cards per...
Because it counts yourself.
Yeah.
And so if you can look at your library as well. I mean, I'm going to put that in every mono red deck from now on because that's just actual card advantage for a decent-sized body.
Each player's library counts yourself.
It seems like Strionic Resonator would be a good include in this deck. I'm just thinking of this now, right? Because it will, you can Strionic Zakama's untap lands ability, right?
Flows a bunch of mana, yeah.
So Strionic with Atali seems really good, too.
That seems really good.
Yeah, so that's a card that's not on the list, and I don't think in the deck.
Strionic with the landfall abilities.
Yeah, with Emeria, with Archangel, right?
Yeah.
Whenever.
There's a lot.
Karametra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Strionic is really good. So there you go. Atali, Primal Storm.
You couldn't Strionic with the land tap for your opponents,
no,
could you?
No, whenever you have a land for mana. I don't think that's a trick. It's not an ability that goes on the stack.
Okay.
It just adds an extra.
It is a whenever. Strionic is... We're not judges. This is where we get ourselves into trouble when we start. Tell me, did I break the game? Ask Danny Batterman.
D. Batterskull.
He's our Game Night's judge.
Let you know.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, now let's talk about that card you were talking about earlier, because I think this interaction is particularly cool.
This is like a must include in this in any Zakama deck.
So this card is a little bit spendy, not going to lie. It's Greater Good. It's 2 green for an enchantment. It says sacrifice a creature and then draw cards equal to the sacrificed creature's power, and then you choose and discard 3 cards. So as long as you sacrifice a creature with at least 4 or more power, you're coming ahead on cards. Also, you're getting some filtering
because
you don't have to discard the cards that you drew with Greater Good. Obviously, with Zakama, you can sack it. Draw 9 cards, discard 3.
So your net gain of 6 cards, and you can cast Zakama again, untap all your lands.
As long as you can pay the commander tax, so you have to have 2 extra mana.
But if you have a mana doubler out already,
you
can go nuts.
Oh, I didn't even think of the mana doubler.
Oh, right. Because you
so,
keep, yeah.
Again, this is playing off of Zakama's ability to untap lands when it comes into play. And so let's say you have 9 lands. And Mirari's Wake.
You generate 18 mana.
So you tap for 18 mana, you use 9 of it on Zakama, untap all your lands. Now you sacrifice Zakama to Greater Good, draw 9 cards, discard 3. Remember, you have 9 mana floating.
Unless your mana doubler is Mirari's Wake, now you draw 10 cards.
Okay. Right, you're right. 10 cards because of Mirari's Wake, yeah. And then, or if it's Zendikar Resurgent, you draw a card for casting Zakama. So you're
right.
10 cards kind of either from, way.
Right.
Okay, so you got 9 mana floating, you sacrifice Zakama, now it costs 11 mana. But I still can tap for 18, so now I've got 27 floating, play Zakama for 11, I got 16 floating, sacrifice, do it again.
Draw another 10 cards.
It's not quite infinite because you're losing a little bit of mana each time, but you're basically losing 2 mana each time, so you can probably do that like 7-8 times.
Right.
Draw most of your deck if you feel like it.
Throw in a Warstorm Surge or something like that, just to...
This is what we were talking about. So Greater Good, obviously, really cool combo. There's some stuff you didn't have in your deck that we were throwing around before the show. So Warstorm Surge, you want to talk about that? It's sort of 2 cards.
Yeah, so Warstorm Surge is another kind of interesting way to build this deck with ways of sacking it. But Warstorm Surge with something like Cloudstone Curio or Erratic Portal or Food Chain, just they go infinite to the point
Food Chain wouldn't technically go infinite.
Food Chain doesn't technically go infinite, but you're untapping your lands with the Food Chain.
Let's
mana.
Read Wardstorm Surge really quick so everybody can get a clear picture of what's
so
going on.
So I won
this
game
is a Jimmy,
this
yeah,
card.
This is a very Jimmy card.
Guys. Five and a red, enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player.
So you cast
you with this, Craig.
It's amazing. It's an amazing card.
So you cast a combo that deals 9 damage to something. Usually in these scenarios.
Or 10 if you have Mirari's Wake.
Yeah. Usually in these scenarios, you're going face because you're trying to kill people with it. So Food Chain is an enchantment we talked about on the sort of most powerful commander decks of all time. It's one of the most powerful cards in the history of Magic. There's legacy decks built around it. It allows you to exile a creature in play and then
add X mana.
Yeah,
you add any one color to your mana pool where X is the exiled creature's converted mana cost
plus one.
And then spend this mana only to cast creature spells.
So that's why Food Chain doesn't quite go infinite with Zakama, because your commander tax is 2. Food Chain gives you +1.
It's only one color as well, so you're going to have to actually still tap lands for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, although if you do it 3 times, you create enough. But yes, but you can go nearly infinite and probably enough to kill everybody.
Enough to kill everybody.
Because you're bleeding
at the table.
Off 1 mana each time you do it.
Right.
Yeah, but because you're doing 9 damage every time
and
you have Warstorm Surge out.
Almost know that you have 9 mana out already. So
right.
You can do it
but you can't,
almost essentially 10 times.
Yeah, which is 90 damage. That's not, in a 3-player, in a 4-player game, that wouldn't quite kill everybody. Still awesome.
Yeah.
Probably you're doing it at a point in the game, too, where everyone's hurt a little.
Mm-hmm.
It's the type of play that you're like, play Food Chain, win. Right?
Right.
Sack it, play it, sack it, play it, sack it, play it. It's... Remember, Zakama only untaps the lands if you cast it. So you have to sort of put it in the command zone, pay the extra commander tax, bring it back out.
Mm-hmm.
Still a really cool.
You also brought up another one before the show. Any deck that's going to play Warstorm Surge would also probably play Purphoros.
Right.
Which, same deal.
Yeah, because every time you cast it, Purphoros is doing 2 damage to each of your opponents. So you're just adding in additional damage. Basically taking a card and recasting it over and over. Even with Greater Good, that could work pretty well for you.
Having ways to draw, too, is huge. Zendikar Resurgent and Greater Good both giving you huge amounts of draw is great.
Another, I think, if you want to build the sort of combo-heavy version of this deck, Cloudstone Curio, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. is probably a must include in the deck. So Cloudstone Curio says whenever you play a permanent, whenever you... Is it permanent? It's not
Yeah,
lands.
Cast a permanent. You can
cast a permanent.
It's like non-artifact, though.
It shares a permanent type with its here.
Right, so if you play an enchantment, you can bounce an enchantment to your hand.
Whenever a non-artifact permanent, sorry.
So if you play Zakama, you can bounce a creature to your hand. So the thing about Zakama, you cast it, and it taps all your lands. You could bounce Zakama back to your hand. This gets around the commander tax thing,
mm-hmm.
and so you can gain mana. So if I've got...
Anything over 9.
I just need 10 lands in play. Or, sorry, my lands just have to tap for 10. I don't even need 10 lands.
Yeah, if you have Guy's Cradle or something like that.
Temple of the False Gods, you know. You can even put, like, a Market Festival and things like that onto your lands to make them tap for more. Plays a comma.
He doesn't have a watermark,
Cloud
does he?
Soon.
Watermark it? No.
Only for another week.
Yeah, for another week. It's still possible.
Plays a comma. Cloudstone Curio triggers. Targeting Zakama. Bounce back to your hand.
Hold on. You can only do... It's another permanent you control.
Oh, you can't do the same permanent.
But you could have... You could literally just do it with...
You'd have to bounce something else and play it. Okay, so you need way more mana. But let's say you had Secure Tribe Elder.
Uh-huh.
Now you play that for 2 mana, bounce Zakama, play Zakama, bounce Secure Tribe Elder, play Secure Tribe Elder, bounce
Or
Zakama.
Soul Ring.
You're going to be gaining mana off it if you're
oh,
able
it's
to
non-artifact.
Yeah, it's non-artifact. So, but still, yeah.
The All right, Cloudstone Curio isn't what we thought
it's still
was,
awesome.
It's still
I think
awesome,
it's still very easy to go infinite because you just need 2 creatures and a lot of mana, but the lot of mana part's covered. Yeah, it seems... Can you only...
If you're building that deck, it's definitely a must include.
I haven't played with Cloudstone in a long time because... Didn't your Animar deck or something have it for
Animar
a while and then you took
it
out?
Yeah. Decks like Krenko would have it as well. Like,
you can still do it. It's just a little harder than I thought. I still think the card's really good because the deck wants Zakama back in its hand to recast.
Yeah.
And there's a very pretty version of it out there. So
very important.
Very, very important.
That's the only thing that actually matters.
And the other one you mentioned already was Erratic Portal, which only does this once. But I think... So Erratic Portal, you can... Basically, you tap the artifact and you can do this to other players... And it says they either pay 1 or the thing is unsummoned. It goes back to their mm-hmm. hands. But you can target your own creatures, and you can just choose not to pay the 1. And so it's sort of an unsummon for your own stuff.
Yeah.
And so, again, when you're in these scenarios where you're netting mana, you're tapping for 18, playing Zakama, untapping all your lands, you really want Zakama to cast Zakama again in that scenario. Tap on my lands, cast Zakama again, but you just have to get it back to your hand. You're not in blue, so it's a little bit harder to do. Erotic Portal gives you an extra one of those. It's kind of like Stryonic Resonator, I suppose. Yeah.
Crystal Shard is the blue version of this, but of course we don't have blue in this deck. We don't have blue in that deck. So we have to copy the effect.
But also, with Zakama's ability, you could choose to pay the one. If you so wanted.
You have a lot of mana.
Erratic Portal is underrated. There are a lot of scenarios where people just kind of forget about it, and you're just like, I just unsummon your... Like, you play Vornclex.
Oh, you've done that to me so many times.
Yeah, or just like...
I'm like, what's... Oh,
dang it.
You tap out again?
Yeah.
Oops, sorry, buddy.
Pay attention.
Pay attention. I like how you put... I'm just going to let you mention these because they don't really have anything to do with
nothing
deck,
to do with
Craig's
the deck.
But Craig's like, no, I have to talk about these two cards.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously ones that go in here.
Win
so
conditions, come on.
Win
they're
cons,
obviously
yeah.
cards that go in here.
Of course.
Just because they're cards you put in every deck.
And they should... You should put this
Hold
in
on,
here.
This
if
is
you're building this deck, you should put these
this
in
This is
here.
An instant kill if no one can block
Both
Zakama.
Of them are. Both of them are instant kills.
Yeah, exactly. With just Zakama, too.
With just Zakama. So, Triumph of the Hordes, +1/+1 infect to all your creatures. He's already got trample, so it's like double trample, whatever.
It gives trample, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a 9/9, so Josh, you said you have to read every part of the card, 9/9, and get +1/+1 from Triumph.
Triumph of the Hordes is actually, like, it's Craterhoof Behemoth.
Yeah.
Like, it's won so many games, and it steals games where, like, you just can't see that. Like, you're calculating around the table, you're a 42 life, you've got propaganda out, you know, blah, blah, blah. And,
oh,
and
it's so good.
You've got everything covered.
It's so
goes
good.
Triumph of the Hordes, and you're like, I'm dead.
I didn't cover for
I'm
that.
Dead. I didn't think of that, yeah.
I've had it played on me. I love it.
Yeah, I love
it. Hey, let's we're go have point, tea in Phyrexia.
We're to the point now where I actually am calculating, okay, but what if they have Triumph of the Hordes?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually have to hold back two more blockers.
I think this is a must include in any green deck. You were talking about Sakura Tribe Elder, like that should be a must include. I think no, Triumph of the Hordes.
The difference between Craig and I.
Yeah.
I want a land ramp creature that could be played early. He's like, no, I want the kill you with infect out of nowhere card.
Needs creatures on the board, needs people to not be able to block it.
Oh, this is a foily one. Okay, this has got it. This is maybe the most Craig card I can think of.
So the other one's Grafted Exoskeleton for a couple reasons. So
wait, let's read the card. It's 4 mana for an equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 and has infect. It costs 2 to equip, and it has this weird thing where whenever Grafted Exoskeleton becomes unattached from a permanent, sacrifice that permanent.
Well, it's grafted
not,
on.
And not really that weird in this, because if you have more than a certain amount of mana, you pay 2 to equip it onto something else.
And then Zakama dies.
Zakama
so you put
dies,
it on Zakama.
You could you use it as a combo piece.
You put it on Zakama.
After you kill somebody with 11 infect.
It for
sorry.
Those that don't get it. You put it on Zakama. You move it to another creature. And it, like that means you have to sacrifice Zakama. That's another way so you can recast Zakama, basically.
Right.
Interesting.
Especially if you have more than a certain
so
amount
it has,
of mana.
It's not just to kill you with a trample 11/11 infect.
Although that is the primary reason for
it's
it.
The primary reason, yeah.
There is also the added ability of it has to sacrifice that creature.
Here's the thing, though. Zakama has 3 heads. Shouldn't you have to unequip it like 3 times to kill a Grafted Exoskeleton?
I feel like...
Once? Or it's like maybe unequip it, remove one of his keyword abilities.
I'd be down with that. I feel like he feels, when you play him, he feels like he has 3 heads. Like... The 3 abilities, they really designed this card as well. Kudos to Wizards for designing this card, because...
I like the white one, because it's just that head's just eating food. It's just like, I'm hungry, I want to gain life. All the other heads are like blasting fire, and everyone's destroying
artifacts
and enchantments. I was like, I'm hungry.
you guys destroy that building over there and fight off those guys, I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
I'm breaking for lunch.
I got to gain some life over here.
Okay.
Is the eating one not the one dealing 3 damage to that creature?
Oh...
No, that one's breathing a fireball.
That's breathing fireball.
And then the green one's eating too, but it's chomping it up. It's like destroying it. It's like, you are not part of nature.
Okay.
Do you think the one's cooking it before the other one's eating it?
Oh, combo.
There you go.
Right?
There's a 4th line of text now.
One of them's destroying the fort that everybody's in. The other one's cooking them all, and the other one's eating them. We've solved it.
That's
flavor.
I'm going home.
Flavor.
Yeah, and it's like if you use all 3 in a row, go get yourself a nice meal. You deserve it.
So there's one card we wanted to talk about at the end. This has some really interesting interactions. Again, something that I didn't really think about. We were talking about this before, Craig, and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's one of the new cards from Rivals. Again, it's Trap Jaw Tyrant.
Tough one.
Whew. 3 white, 5 mana for a 5/5 creature dinosaur. It has Enrage. Whenever Trapjaw Tyrant is dealt damage, exile target creature an opponent controls until Trapjaw Tyrant leaves the battlefield.
Okay, that makes... We should have paid attention to these cards before we talk.
No, I think it's still fine. It's still a good card.
Because you can use...
True. You just can't do the Zakama thing.
So before the episode, we were talking about, wait, what if you targeted Zakama by using his deal 3 damage with it, and then he exiles it, so when you Wrath, then he comes back.
Yeah, save it from a board wipe. You can't do that. It says opponent controls. Thank goodness we just reread the card. But Zakama's ability allows you to ping the Trapjaw Tyrant.
At least once.
Yeah. But you can do it on your turn, the next turn, the next turn. So with Trapjaw Tyrant out, you can just start exiling creatures that your opponents control for 3 mana rather than...
Yeah.
And you can do it 3 mana per turn, as you just said. So it's, if you're waiting for the table to come around, after he comes out, you just leave that mana untapped.
Yep, on your end turn step, 3. I'll get rid of that.
Yeah, because it's going to heal from
end
the
step, even
turn.
Untap. You know, I don't want that around this turn. Get rid of that.
True. So this card, I think, is really good in the deck. Because of that first ability from Zakama. But it's not going to save Zakama from a Wrath.
No.
Dang it.
So it goes.
New cards.
Just went from a must-add to a meh.
I still think it's really good.
It's really good, but it's not a... Come on. Yeah. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, true. And then once they do Wrath, they get all their stuff back. It's a little bit tough.
Yeah,
that's why Banisher Priest and stuff are sort of... Without little combo-y stuff, you don't really want to use them. All right. Time for To the Listeners. So what do you think is Zakama? What cards did we not talk about that you think are must-includes in the Zakama deck? You know, one of the things about game nights that I've found fun, but also a little bit frustrating or tough, is that we have to build these decks at a point when they're not on EDH Rec. Nobody knows about them yet. There's not a good way. And there's a lot of pressure. I don't know if you guys feel it when you're on the show, but there's a lot of pressure. I'm like, I have to build this deck. And by the time people see it, the internet will have gotten their hands on the card, and Reddit and EDH Rec and everybody else will have thought of all the best combos that are possible with this commander. But right now, I'm not allowed to talk to anybody about it, or even, you know, I have to just come up with that stuff on my own by myself. And, you know, it's easy in that scenario to miss stuff, you know. And there's a lot of times where we play a commander on game nights and I've been like, oh crap, I should have thought of that. But I mean, you know, the internet has a million minds working on it and I've just got mine.
And you had like half a week to make the deck.
Yeah, exactly. So very possible we missed some really cool interactions for Zakama that Craig's a really good deck builder. So I think he got most of them.
I think so.
Let me know if you guys thought of any others because my play group needs to be taken down.
This is going to be weird because I'm in your play group and I want to build a Zakama deck. So what are
I
we
do
going
to
do?
We should all build Zakama decks and play against each other.
Let's do it. I'm adding Infect to mine.
It's not the search for Ezkanta. It's the race to Zakama, to casting him first.
This to me is like one of the perfect cards. It's like gives you answers to everything.
Yeah.
Just about.
Kind of does. And against other Zakama decks, his middle ability becomes far less relevant because everybody's land ramping.
Yeah. Oh, pretty interesting.
But as soon as somebody gets out of Vidalcan Orrery, it's like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Vidalcan. Oh, so good with Zakama, too. Flash it in, untap your lands, activate him on end step.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Activate him again.
Vidalcan. Make sure, if you guys want to activate some Zakama abilities, to buy the cards you need for this deck.
Vidalcan Orrery.
Yeah. By going to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, that's our sponsor for the show. Again, very fast shipping. You can get these cards by the time Zakama arrives in actual form as well. Very easily. You can build this deck right now and just, you know, get it ready to roll out.
And great prices, too. Like, I got most of my cards through Card Kingdom, and they have...
affiliate link, Craig?
We didn't even...
I bought most of my cards before the affiliate link existed.
Wow.
And Card Kingdom has... Like, honestly, for the past 7 years, I've ordered most cards from Card Kingdom. Because they're usually the best.
Craig owns more Magic cards than anybody, about that you know. He has more
than
either.
Invested.
Yeah.
You probably have more than Jimmy and I put together, and I have a lot of cards.
I got a lot of
cards. I have more. Okay, let's put it this way. I have more opened cards than you and Jimmy.
True.
But
that's a good
this
point.
This is it.
I'm a collector.
Interesting distinction.
If you're collecting cards, if you have a lot of cards, you need to do things like put them into sleeves, put them into deck boxes, put them into binders. Make sure that you play them on play mats so they don't get all dirty. And the best brand to use for all that stuff is definitely Ultra Pro. In fact, they're going to be coming out with all the Rivals of Ixalan themed stuff. Again, we're going to show them off in Game Nights, which will come out in maybe a couple of weeks.
Such an exciting episode.
It is a pretty sweet episode. So, support Ultra Pro. That way you're supporting Command Zone.
They just came out with those sleeves, too, that are sick. The Eclipse sleeves.
They're the best.
And a couple different colors, too, because they started out with
different colors. We have, like, pink, white, yellow, orange, red, blue.
I just like how they're two-toned, too. They're, like, on the inside feels rich.
Yeah. I just saw that purple's coming soon. They didn't say exactly when, but they said soon.
Is it purple and black? Because that's amazing.
Blacks out,
yeah. But is it purple and black?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Please. I think on the inside, it's always black, a black mat, because it's double layered.
Because, they don't want it to be translucent.
I have a deck that's going to be...
And yellow.
Yep. Sweet.
All right. Now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Usually, we didn't warn you, Craig, but you've been on the show enough times. You probably saw it coming.
I've been here enough to know that that's a thing, and I forgot about it. And now I'm like, okay, what can I talk about?
What's a new show you've been watching? You watch a lot of TV.
I've been rewatching Frasier.
Frasier?
And I am loving it. Like, Niles is one of the best characters. You know how every show just has one? Niles is just great.
One of the great all-time TV shows.
Based in Seattle as well.
Yep.
I never watched much of it, but...
Oh, you should watch it. It's great.
I was a Seinfeld, Simpsons, and Friends kid growing up.
Friends so much for me. I was more Seinfeld, but...
Yeah.
I went through Friends last year. Netflix has kind of like let me catch up on everything.
You have to commend the writing on those shows because it is pitch perfect. There's never a dull moment in any... like, and it's incredible because Seinfeld is so different than Friends, but they're both... gut-splittingly funny. I don't know. They make
gut-roaring.
Every episode's good. You're right. Same with Frasier. Every episode's good. Like, you get something out of it.
All right. You heard it here. Frasier is good. It was like the top TV show for like, I don't know, like a decade. Forever.
For a while.
At least 10 seasons.
Yeah. One of the top podcasts out there for forever. is the Masters of Modern, our sister podcast. Alice Kessler, good friend of Craig. I just want to throw this out there because earlier we mentioned you in conjunction with Ultra Pro, and people are like probably going like, "Why was Craig involved with them?" Because Craig did a web series with Alex Kessler called Top Decking, which is
5 years ago now, I think.
Yeah. And Kessler's fiance now, Whitney Merritt, was the lead.
That's right.
So, which was very popular at the time. If you haven't checked out Top Decking, you can find it on YouTube. Definitely, I think it's like the only. It's definitely the biggest Magic the Gathering web series that's ever existed, the most popular. So I know a lot of people still do recognize you for stuff like that when we're at events. But there's probably a lot of people out there that don't know about it. So go check out Top Decking.
That was a real end step.
Yeah. But Masters of Modern, which is our sister podcast, Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format, all things competitive Magic. This year we'll have a Modern Pro Tour, 2018 will, whereas 2017 didn't. So probably a format you want to start learning a little bit about even if you just want to watch the Pro Tour. I listen to those guys.
Modern being played is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite format to watch outside of Limited.
I would say if you play Modern, you should be listening to them because they are very introspective and really, they really have their finger on the pulse of the whole Modern kind of scene.
I don't even play Modern, but I listen to them so that I can watch it on the Pro Tour and stuff. And you can learn little things about Commander that you're like, oh, I can apply it.
I listen to Kessler talk outside the podcast about Modern all the time. I mean, this kid like eats, sleeps, and breathes Magic.
I mean, their podcast is great as well. They just spoiled what they are declaring the greatest blue-green card in Modern's history.
What is that?
But it's also because they also said that every blue-green card in Modern sucks.
It's bad. So it's a Merfolk card, and the Merfolk deck is a real deck in Modern.
And they also spoiled like Fatal Push and stuff. So obviously they're a great go-to source. Make sure you check them out. Where?
You can find them right next to us on collected.company, or you can follow them on Twitter at the MMcast.
All right. And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. He does the video and audio versions of this podcast, including our faces right now and Craig's face, a new audio feed for him to edit. How exciting. Craig did a great job, by the way, staying close to the microphone this time.
I'm very impressed.
Can you hear me?
Almost like a pro.
Well, Craig does have this very nice, deep baritone voice, so it's very soothing to hear. I remember the first time we had you on the podcast, I was like, oh my God, turn the bass down on this guy.
Is this Craig?
Oh my gosh. Oh, goodness.
Craig, say, in a world. Say it.
In a world where dinosaurs have three heads, Zakama reigns primal.
Okay. And of course, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer. He does the 11 card animations that start and end the show on our video podcast. You can find those all at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. You can find Craig on Twitter at Craig Blanchett. He will answer all of your Magic related questions.
Oh, if you have a question about Infect, there's your guy.
Tweet at me.
We'll talk to you about Infect all day long. Forever.
Welcome to Phyrexia, baby.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
I switched it for all the Brits. Is it better?
Can you do both?
Well, no, they keep telling me this is bad. It's
If you do it
in Australia,
like,
do you have to do it?
I'm doing
like
it sideways.
This?
Yeah.
It's if you like. Imagine
this is V for victory, by the way.
Yeah. Imagine I had this. If you do it like this, then it's offensive.
I've heard that if you do it like this, it's less accurate. So you should do it like this.
Less accurate?
Accurate.
What am I aiming at?
It's just what I've heard, man.
I'm just doing peace, like peace out. But in this, yeah. You know, this used to be an insult to archers because they would cut off the fingers of archers. And
well,
then
that's where the middle finger comes from.
Yeah, so but they would do this to show archers, like, look, I have two fingers.
They used to, okay, so when you're shooting somebody, you'd call it plucking them.
Sure.
Yeah, well, pluck you. I still have my middle finger. I can still pluck you.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
And what they would do if they captured archers,
cut off the middle finger,
off their finger.
You can't
use a bow
shoot
anymore.
An arrow.
Yeah.
Is that where bunny ears came from?
No, I don't know where this comes from. But
well, this
the
is
middle
the
finger.
I think they would show to an archer, like, look, I have both my fingers.
Oh, is that why in Britain it's here, but I can't. We're not still. I don't know even now.
I'm pretty sure that.
Blur
this
it
is,
out if I accidentally show the middle finger,
this
please, Terry.
This is the show, look, I have two fingers, you don't. That's an insult. As in, because if you capture an archer, you would just cut off those fingers.
I heard it was just the middle finger.
Oh, really?
And that's why the middle finger insult exists. But yours makes more sense because Great Britain is where the longbow was.
And
this is where supposedly the two fingers backwards is an insult. Anyway. Peace. 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 Peace.
Homies in Australia.
Yeah.
The walking man. Do the moonwalk.
I'm sorry. I'm fancy. I just want peace on earth and goodwill to men and women.
Aw.
That's it.
And dogs. Okay, bye, guys.